Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Outcast mid-season break. Yes, we've had some wonderful episodes that have gone before, some extraordinary guests, and we have some extraordinary guests to come. But for now, we are going to have a little sojourn, a little break, whilst we collate all our other episodes and edit and hone and polish and get them ready for your listeners' consumption. But of course, in the meantime, please remember to rate and subscribe, as that all helps. And we look forward to seeing you with a full, wonderful, brand spanking, sparkling new episode next week. But for now, we have a little bonus extra that we thought you would love to hear. Now, this is the very first thing that David and I recorded.
Our very first attempt at a podcast.
To be honest with you, I haven't heard this until literally now. You people are now hearing it, as well as me, right now. Sit back and enjoy.
Trip down memory lane.
There we go. Now we're recording. Now it's proper.
Official. Broken the ice.
Broken the ice. Right. Let me find that script again, because I've lost it now. Okay. Here we go. Goldenrod, scene 15. Do you want to introduce it, or shall I?
Well, you want to jump straight into straight into the scenes? You know what? We shouldn't introduce our show. What we're doing right now.
We can cut around all these things. We can do little.
Let's do it.
Segments.
Okay, sounds good to me.
So we could do this segment first, and then
let's
we could do
a segment.
Little introduction. Might warm us up.
Okay, sounds good. I think you should introduce it.
Okay. This is scene 15. So this is a scene that was never shot.
No, it was shot. It was shot.
You did? Oh, right. So it was shot, but it was never screened.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the first. This is fabulous. This is scene 15. Lord John Grey, Jamie Fraser. Mm-hmm. Exterior, Fraser's Ridge. Family plot, dusk. Day 7. Jamie and John Grey have been to the whiskey still and now find themselves rolling a barrel of whiskey towards the site of Murta's grave. This is made slightly more difficult by the fact that both are holding their respective beverage receptacles and by fact that they are both, by now, incredibly drunk. I don't know why this was never screened. This is awesome. Okay. I take it you're doing you.
I'll do me.
Do you want me to do an accent? Do you want me to do an accent? Or is that a bad idea?
Yeah, it's whatever feels right to you.
I'm going to see how I feel. I'm going to start it. And then if it drifts off, then we'll leave it. Okay.
Are you going to call action? Action.
I'm going to call action. Okay, action.
Do you believe in ghosts?
I fear that matter will become a matter, haunt ye? And if this is, I'm going to stick with it. For all your fierce political debates.
I mean, it's uncanny. I know that's what you're thinking. That is uncanny. I'm back on the ridge. Okay, go.
Okay, sorry, director. I may not have seen eye to eye with your godfather, but I fear he was right about trying after all.
Jamie positions the barrel and taps it demonstratively. A drunk for mutter, and the other brave ones lost at Alamance. About time.
I mean, he sounds a lot drunker. He sounds a lot drunker by now.
I had to bring him home to bury him. Give Jocasta the chance to join us. John Grey wishes he could do more to go to Jamie, put a comforting hand on his shoulder, but he knows his place.
You've been damn brave, Jamie, to wait this long, to let it all out again.
I've Claire and Brianna and Roger to think of.
Poor old Roger.
Jamie looks at John Grey, a rare moment of vulnerability, exaggerated by the alcohol.
He's not himself. Maybe he's a ghost.
Again, maybe too drunk, but I'm going to stick with it.
No, no, no. Roger's not a ghost. But there's something else haunting you.
Aye. Something that may come back to haunt them. Brianna and Roger. Though they didn't ken it.
Bonnet. Is capturing him still a priority?
Nay. But killing him is. A beat, as they both contemplate the seriousness of that.
I suppose Murta would drink to that. And I'll do whatever I can. You know that. I'm glad we could have one last drink together. All three of us, before I leave. Slaunch.
No, we can't say that. Means good health.
Think of something else.
Murta, I hope you go to heaven before the devil kent you were dead. Jamie and John pour whiskey onto the ground for Murta. End scene.
End scene.
End scene.
End episode. End series, I think.
End scene. Boom. Mic drop. It's done. Thanks very much, everyone, for coming. Get your coats. Cars around the corner.
I have no idea why you did not get the part of Jamie, because you auditioned for that, didn't you?
I have no idea. I feel that he's somewhat my interpretation is he's slightly gruffer, and by the sound of him, slightly shorter. I would feel like he'd be a lot shorter, maybe about 5'6". Not strapping.
I think he's doing. He's doing ads for Scottish tourism, or he's an extra on Braveheart or something. I don't know. He's.
I think so. He'd be doing things for defunct banks. My Jamie Fraser.
Well, here's the thing. You're not the first person to play Jamie Fraser opposite me. He wasn't Jamie Fraser with a terrible Scottish accent. No judgment on your accent. Actually, I guess there is a bit of
none
judgment
taken.
I just said. But I think it was a very fine Scottish accent. When I first went in to read for John Gray, it was, of course, in Australia. And the person I was reading opposite was, his name is Christian, and I went to drama school with him, and he is, of course, Australian. And I've got to say that his accent sounded pretty akin to yours. I couldn't understand a thing he was saying during the audition, and I just had to smile and nod. And I got to say, I couldn't understand anything you just said just then. I was
good. Then I feel like I've hit just the right note. Uh-huh. I'm sure that when you did that casting, you were thinking, do you know what? If I end up getting this, I am going to spend months of my life barely understanding anyone for the next 6 months, easily. Next 6 months, just nodding and smiling.
I did. Going,
yes.
And that was that. My suspicions were confirmed as I touched on the ground and got to the hotel, and the person at the hotel, after like a 25 hour plane ride, said something in Scottish. I can't remember what it was. Basically, because I couldn't decipher what she was saying, and I said to her, "Sorry, can you just repeat what you said?" And she must have said something like, "Your room is down the hall and to the left." But I made her say it again. And and this is the thing with Scottish people. They apologize in the first instance. Like, they know their language is, or their accent. it's not a language, but it sounds like a different language. They know their accent is difficult to understand. And they're the first to apologize for it. They'll say, "Yeah, sorry." And then they'll go about repeating themselves.
Yeah. In exactly the same tone as it was before, as much as any true Englishman would do when abroad, as if, you know, you go into a bar or a restaurant or something like that, or a hotel, and any Englishman worth his salt will say very quickly, assuming everyone can speak English, so which way is it to the bar? And to which the person will probably go, no English. And they'll go, "Oh, I see. I can handle this. Don't worry. Which way? Which way to the bar? I want to go to the bar? The bar. I don't understand why he doesn't understand. The bar. Right. I want to go to the bar."
And louder and slower. That's the best way of translating anything.
Exactly. Raising the eyebrows, hand gestures, and that will see you through any country whatsoever.
Including Scotland.
Fabulous.
So, mate, well, what do you want to know about this scene? What should I tell you? We shot this in the afternoon, and we were not drunk. And Mm. Although, have you ever done a scene drunk?
No, although I remember watching with Nell and I, and there's that sequence right in the beginning of the film where he's hungover, where Richard E. Grant's hungover, and Bruce Robinson said to him, what we'd like to do is you should go out and get drunk. And he doesn't drink. So he went out, I think he had like four beers and then was violently ill and came in the next morning. And Bruce Robinson said, yes, that's exactly this. The way you are feeling now is exactly that. That type, that's it. But mm-hmm. I've never done it through fear that I would just literally forget everything. The fear would kill it for me. Absolutely. I would be too worked up. I think even if I had a small sherry, I would be like, well, I'm drunk. That's it. I'm drunk. Forget it. That's it. I might as well go and have a lie down. I might as well just go and just drive a car into a hedge. So this, anyway, you were shooting this in the afternoon.
Yeah, yeah.
You weren't drunk.
I wasn't drunk. And
good.
Which is, like we said, look, so there's something about the method of the method that appeals to me. And just like you were talking about, I was thinking, wouldn't it be interesting if I did do this thing drunk? And then get fired from Outlander and never be on set again. But similar to what you're saying, I remember like there's that story of Dustin Hoffman and Laurence Olivier and Marathon Man, and he apparently Dustin Hoffman showed up to work like just looking terrible, and like sweat coming down, and he hadn't slept for days. And Laurence Olivier said to him something like, you know, what have you been doing? And apparently Dustin Hoffman, because this scene required him to look like he hadn't slept for days, or actually required him to, not be sleeping for days and had been running around because it's Marathon Man. And Dustin said he'd done just that. He hadn't slept for days and been running around all day. And Laurence Olivier, in his English way, just said, yeah, why don't you just act? That's the thing, right? It's you can try and live the experience, or you can just act. And I think that's what we tried to do, or at least I tried to do. And that's the funny thing with being drunk is that you're always told in drama school, to play drunk, you have to play against it.
You have to play sober, mm-hmm. play yourself being sober, and kind of heighten. It's that heightened awareness.
Right, which always confused me because, like, me playing sober is just—it's almost like a double negative. It's like it gets me too in my head, and I don't even know what that means. It's like to play sober almost has an assumption that you're in sort of an a priori drunk. You know, you're drunk from you know, if you take it as a given, everyone's drunk, and then you just you got to turn up the sober. Doesn't make sense to me. We went for one take, and I guess that was kind of playing in my mind, and maybe I was playing, I was a bit too sober. Didn't have that looseness in it. And, then Stephen made us play it again, and, I really loosened it up. And you know, when you're really loose on set, my fear, rather than actually being drunk, my fear is being too big with your choices and looking like ridiculous. So, and maybe that's why ultimately this thing never made the cut, because I did look ridiculous and they're just doing me a massive favor. We ended up,
you had your trousers around your ankles for half the scene. That's probably why they said, do you know what, David, I think you might have pushed this a bit far. I like some of your choices. Don't get me wrong, the hair choice was great. It was the lack of trousers and the blood on your hands. I just thought that was just a bit too much.
Yeah. I wound it back, and we did, and we ended up kicking a barrel along and getting all like really loose with it, and and it had a really nice vibe. And I remember walking away from the scene thinking, like, damn, we really did a good job with that. And that's one thing that I always try to do with scenes with Jamie Fraser in particular, is try to find some kind of new dimensionality to their relationship. When Lord John Grace first, you know, met Jamie, he was a bit uptight and he was young and really fearful of the whole situation. They didn't get on all that well, but they had a certain chemistry and simpatico of thought and feeling. And with every subsequent scene, I've tried to like find a new dimension with it. And this one, I thought, let's really play against the morose overtones to it, you know, the death of Murtagh, and try and find this kind of camaraderie in grief and also joy in grief, because it's a really complex emotion, that grief. It was, there's like,
yeah,
seven stages of it. I don't think joy is one of them, but maybe it comes under denial. Maybe that's one of them.
Could be, yes. Right? Yes, you could have a subset of the seven stages of grief. One being joy, one being elation, one being like, oh, I'm glad they're gone. And then you go, no, hang on, that's bad. And then you bring it back again. Should I feel this? Sad? No.
I mean, Lord John Grey wouldn't be all that upset that Murtagh's dead. I mean, he's not. Murtagh's been doing some pretty bad things, and if anything, he's just another step in the way of getting closer to Jaime.
Well, this is it. This is it. You know, I mean, maybe the biggest thing that the problem with it was that Murtagh was going to give him a lift home. And that was a big problem. Now he's dead, which has really put the kibosh on things. Now he's just kind of going, well, I might as well get drunk because I can't get home. The last cab's gone. We've all been here. And I've just buried him. That's happened before. I don't want to say when. But now Lord John Grey in a bit of a pickle. Might as well just get drunk. Wait till the morning. Exactly. Maybe get a bus.
Well, yeah. I mean, and well, look, all jokes aside, I definitely did try and make this scene about something not about Murtagh. And I think, and when I discussed it with Matt and, I think the writers, I was like, how can I make this scene into a love story? How is it about Lord John just trying to like have a romantic moment with Jaime, even at the grave of his best his friend?
You're chancing.
Right. I can think of, it's a pretty romantic setting, and Lord John is, you know, not indiscreet. I think he's still sensitive to Jamie's feelings, but at the end of the day, like he really loves the guy, and he's not going to miss his chance.
their eyes just meet through the miasma. And, nice.
So I think we're learning for all these reasons why this scene was cut. Ultimately,
you know what? I'm seeing is positives. I'm just saying they should have shifted something else. And this should have been. In fact, do you know what I think? I think they should have played it twice. I think they should have had it at the beginning, and you don't know why it's there. One of those, almost like Memento, and then you play it again, and then you go, I get it now. With the, I didn't know where they were going, but now I know where they're going. Oh, Murtagh's dead. That's interesting. You know, something like that. I enjoyed it. I think my rendition was particularly emotional, but on the whole, it's a good scene. And you know, that's the way things go, isn't it? That's what happens with TV. As you said, you know, there's 60 odd pages of script. Some of it has to go. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's difficult.
It's difficult. And that's probably the first and only time anyone's ever going to hear it. On this podcast, exclusive.
This is it.
And I think, like, as in general, Lord John Grey in this season, unfortunately, he's a bit, I mean, he's a bit superfluous to the plot. So, and we all know this because he's not in the book, but the writers were keen to get me in. And I think they did a pretty good job of, you know, trying to make it important in the actual fabric of the episode. But when you get down to like doing the cut, things like this tend to stick out because they you know, halt the pace of the show, the arc of where the director's trying to push things. And when I did see the episode back, you know, you only spend a very small amount of time actually thinking about Murtagh and his death. We're moving on from that. The show's got to move on. And you spend more time with Lord John Grey and Jaime thinking about this, it just takes away from other elements of the show. And I'm just being very gracious in saying how disappointed and upset I was at this scene being cut. But we had our moment.
But good news.
It's been revived.
It's now been immortalized in podcasting, the annals of podcasting history. Yeah. I mean, that's
it's there.
People will listen back. People will bring their kids to this and say, this was a scene that was never screened, but take a listen to this. That guy sounds short, but the other guy is very good.
I love it. I love it.
Well, there you go, ladies and gents. That was our very first attempt at a podcast. What do you think, Tim? How'd we go?
I loved it. Although I hopefully think we've got better. I do hope we've got better. Oh, well, that's for the listeners to decide.
I agree. And so instead of doing listener questions, I think we should do something a little different this time. I think we should do is go to Mr. Google and how about we do that thing where we Google ourselves, Tim? What do you say? Should we go that rabbit hole?
Yes, let's leap down that rabbit hole like Alice. Let's do it.
All right, I'm going to type here, outcast review and see what comes up. Oh!
Okay.
Here we go.
Okay.
This is a review from Purple4199. Okay, Purple, here we go. I just finished the podcast about 30 minutes ago. It was pretty good. They did lose me a little when they got to talking about the craft of acting and some of that, but them doing the script reading as the other characters had me cracking up. And look, there's a reply, Tim.
All right, okay. I got a bit bored during that part too, but fortunately, I was listening while baking, so I had the mixer going during that part. Ha ha. I love their attempt at Scottish accents. I'm excited to see where it'll go from here. And then someone else... indeed, ask for the link. Very kind.
Okay, well, that's pretty good, Tim.
That's okay. That's not bad. It's a good start.
Pretty good, in their own words. Pretty good. Should we just look for a couple more? I think we could probably get even better than that.
Why not? Okay.
How about you go for a type? You dig there in the internet.
Google us. Let's have a quick scroll through. Okay. Here we go. Here's one. Tim Downey and David Berry are doing a podcast called Outcasts. Mm-hmm. Two episodes so far, they read a scene from the show and then talk about it.
Yes, we do.
First step, it's kind of a hot mess because the two of them are reading a scene with four characters and stage directions, but the commentary is very interesting.
Ooh.
And they're pretty funny. It goes on. It's weird listening to David Berry speak not like Lord John. Yeah, I bet it is odd. I bet it is strange. Tim Downey sounds exactly the same. Lol. The second episode, they interview herself and she participates in the scene reading, and it's great. There you go. The interview after is very interesting. They talk about writing the episode she was assigned, writing sex scenes, etc. Just one more little nugget to help us get through Droughtlander. That's great. Thank you very much. That's a nice one. Thank you very much. I think that's Mrs. Chicken Pam. So thank you very much for that.
Oh, thanks, Chicken Pam. I think we've got a bit of consensus here, Tim. We're pretty good and pretty funny.
That's good. I'm glad that we do help whilst baking. That was one of my prime things. So I'm actually quite happy about that.
So there you go, Tim. We have improved, I think. And look, I have no problem with being a hot mess.
I pride myself on being a hot mess. I'm a hot mess most days. So if that comes across just hourly, then more power to us.
So I guess what you can look forward to, listeners, is more hot messes and more pretty funny stuff.
Happy with that. Every day of the week.
Thank you for those reviews. Keep them coming in. Remember to rate, subscribe, and write those reviews. We love Googling ourselves from time to time.
We do indeed. And it's amazing what you can find. So please, as David says, please rate, review, and subscribe. Thank you for listening to Outcasts. Follow us on our Instagram page at outcast.podcast for all the latest updates.
Or you can send us an email at outcastspodcastshow@gmail.com.
Every week, we shall select a question from one of our listeners to answer on the show.
The theme music is composed by Kieran Ledwidge. All views and opinions expressed on the show are our own and have no affiliation with the series of books written by Diana Gabaldon or the Sony Stars television show Outlander.
No animals were harmed in the making of this podcast. Although I did have a ham sandwich earlier, so...
See you next time.
See you next time.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.